Today on True Friend with Corey Montel Scott.
I guess I didn't really find my voice until I started writing more. I always wrote, but recording them and getting them down, I was like, this is Brian McKnight song. I'm going to try to sound like him on this song, and this is that. But I think my first album, which I released, originally released when I was, 24, 25, I think it kind of gave me a voice, and then although I was still... Clive Davis heard that record and said, well, we already have a Brian McKnight, so we don't need another one. So I still had elements. Yeah, I still had elements of that, of him. But it was the beginning of finding my own voice. If you need
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of True Friend with Corey Montel Scott. Now, if you want to stay up to date on future episodes, make sure you click that subscribe button down below. Today is a dream come true for me. So you're listening to someone, all of you who may like my music, like the couple of songs that I've released, or like the way that I play as a musician. You probably have 80% of this guy to thank. He's someone who I have been listening to since I was in middle school. And his music definitely defines many moments in my life. But ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show, Mr. Matt Cusson.
Wow, man. What an introduction. Sheesh, I'm over here blushing. I want to talk about that theme song.
Oh, gosh. Well, yep.
I was over here losing my mind. Oh, my God. It's so good, bro.
You know what? I appreciate that from you. That's a theme song edit of my latest single, True Friend, which is, I named the podcast after. So are you familiar with Dawkins and Dawkins, Eric Dawkins?
Of course.
So I want you to know 3 weeks ago, they had very nice things to say about the song. So to hear you say that now, bro. Listen, y'all are really blowing my mind this month.
Nah, bro, I'm telling you, that song, when that popped on, I was texting my wife and I put it down. I just forgot. I got to finish texting my wife because it was so good. I started paying attention. Killing, man, killing.
Well, Matt, I appreciate that. And you know, honestly, truly, I have you to thank. Let's get into the interview because this could take forever. The way that I feel about this moment right now, I could get into a way. But I'm going to start off the show by asking you, who is Matt Cusson and how would you define yourself to someone who has never met or heard of you before?
Man, that's a great question. And it's a loaded question. I'll try to give you the off the top of my head quick answer. Man, hopefully people see me as just a good person. And musically, it has been a journey, as I'm sure most musicians these days go through. Well, I'm sure we'll talk about a lot of that journey in the interview. But I at this moment in time, I am a father and a husband. I am music is my life. I put aside a lot of things that I might enjoy to just focus on music, especially when you have a child, everything changes. And I'm like, okay, I got to make all the money I can make and do everything that I can. very hard worker. All of my time is dad, husband, music, and Celtic games, as we talked about earlier. But you don't like sports, so we won't go there.
Well, Matt, I can totally identify with that, me being a husband and a father of three. So how many years have you been married, Matt?
January will be 12. Wow, 12. That's
12 years?
12 years, yeah.
Get out. January what?
January, oh, don't tell her that I'm January 4th. January
4th. Okay, ours is January 29th. So we've been married now I'm getting ready to have a moment like you. I don't know if it's 6 or 7. But in January, it'll be one of those years. She's probably upstairs listening to me like, I know you're kidding. But let's kind of get into your backstory here. It's my understanding that you grew up in a very musically oriented family. I heard that your mom was a classical pianist and your father was a choir director, among many other things. In what ways were you able to kind of merge your exposure to various genres to create the unique Matt Cusson sound?
Oh, man. Thank you. So I grew up, I am 10 and 12 years younger than my brother and sister. So I was almost like an only child. You know, I didn't really have the camaraderie of a brother, sister that's just a little bit older or younger than me. So growing up, my mom taught piano lessons from about 8 a.m. to 5, 6 p.m. every single day, but Saturday and Sunday. As soon as she was done, so I heard classical music all day long, beautiful classical music. As soon as she was done, my dad would come home from work and put all his jazz records on. So I would soak up the jazz. I really love the jazz. He's the one that introduced me to Take Six and Miles Davis and all that stuff. From there, my brother always liked the singer-songwriter stuff, the James Taylor, Billy Joel, Elton John, and some rock stuff. And my sister always liked the R&B stuff, Stevie, Earth, Wind, and Fire. So as a young kid, every single day I'm hearing all this different music. And every single day after my dad was done, you know, playing his records and it was quiet in the house, I would go bang on the piano. I had a drum set downstairs. I started playing drums and I would always put on shows for my stuffed animals, whoever would watch me, you know, dance and sing. And I used to dance all the time when I was a kid too. So I think it's just being a little melting pot for all that different style and hearing like not just classical music from my mom, but piano exercises, and then trying to go figure out what they just did after the lesson and stuff like that. So it's just growing up like that. And then, of course, you go to school and all of your friends like pop music and New Edition and Michael Jackson and all that stuff. So it was just coming from every direction, and I soaked every bit of it up because I really do enjoy most styles of music.
So do you have like a particular memory where you knew without a shadow of a doubt, okay, I'm connecting to this thing? With it being from both sides, which is very similar to mm-hmm. my wife. So she went to school and studied opera. I'm more of the church R&B mm-hmm. pop side. Yep. So I don't know much about the classical, and in a way I've been able to introduce her to my mm-hmm. side of things as well. Beautiful. Is there a particular story where you realized, okay, this is resonating with me, this is what I want to do when I grow up and I become a husband and a father?
Yeah, so honestly, man, it was never in my brain as long as I can remember that I wasn't going to be a musician. I don't do anything else. A lot of me, and this is be funny to some people because I'm a short person, wanted to be a basketball player. So it was either basketball or music. And as you can tell by just looking at me, music was the correct choice. I'm very short. I had a moment where I could jump really high, but that went away quickly. So I remember a couple different moments. I always, like I said, sang in my bedroom. I was kind of a hermit. I would just kind of go in my room and study Take Six. I remember having two tape recorders, and I always heard six different parts when I heard Take Six, and I would record one and then play it, press record on the other one and sing the second part, and then just kind of go back and forth until all six parts. And it was, you know, you could barely make it out because of the going back and forth and take the steps. But, the couple moments where I realized that could actually be a career was one time I sang in a church. I'll start with this. I was 10 years old and I sang at an open mic night. In this local, there was probably 50 people there. And I sang Round and Round by Tevin Campbell. And the reaction was crazy. Now, first I was like, well, I'm just a kid and I sang and it was cute. So they all thought it was great. But 2 years after that, when I was 12, I sang in a church, and an old woman came up with tears in her eyes and said, she was like, you need to do this. You need to sing for people. Everybody needs to hear you sing. And from there, I honestly was never in my mind that I wouldn't be a musician, but these little, you know, confirmations from people like that, especially in that capacity where somebody's crying because of the way I sang. I just was like this. I want that to happen all the time. I want to touch people. I want to make people feel better. I want to do this. I want to inspire people. And I just kind of, I never did anything else. I never had a real job. I never had to, work at McDonald's or anything like that to get by. Thankfully, I was able to make a living doing music. And, it never was in my mind that I wouldn't be.
I can totally share the sentiments of the lady that told you that. When you released your debut project in 2009, which I came across maybe 2 or 3 years later, you know, your music has a healing element to it. I'll never forget going into a Dollar General and running into an old neighbor mm-hmm. and hearing that another neighbor that I grew up with had passed away from suicide. Mm-hmm. And during that time, I was listening to your debut album. And mm-hmm. when I got in the car after hearing that, of course, I was kind of hurt and sad by that.
Of course.
But Once Upon a Time came on, and it's mm-hmm. that chord progression after the first chorus that goes from like that flat seven to the four.
Yeah, I love a flat seven to a four. Yeah,
it comforted me. Just that one part. Man. I replayed that part over and over again, and in a way, it was healing, but it was also kind of allowing me to see the type of not only chord progressions, but the type of sounds that I resonated with, things that made me close my eyes and kind of go into myself internally and escape.
That's amazing. Thank you for that, by the way. That's incredible.
What things inspire you to write? You know, what you know, when listening to, so I can go down the list of all your songs, you know, talking about Every Step, Here's to You and Me, Take Me Along, One of Those Nights, You Don't Have to Hurry Home. All those songs are in my playlist, and I've been listening to them over the past a decade. Wow. What places do you have to go to in order to produce such wonderful and timeless songs?
Thank you so much, man. Wow. It's when it comes to my own music, I definitely go deep into my guts and pull things out that I never didn't even know were there. It's funny when I write for other people, I try to do the same for them. Like, you know, let's dig deep into this. They come with a concept and I try to say, okay, how can we flip it? How can we, you know, describe it so it paints a picture for people. When it comes to my own stuff, I had somebody tell me not too long ago that, you know, you're so close to your music. It's almost bad. You're so tight with the lyrics you write. So every one of those songs you just named came from a different story. I get inspired by stories, people's stories. I always try to, every time I meet somebody new, I want to hear a story. Every time I'm always interested when I'm driving, I wonder where that car's going. I wonder where they're going, if they're having a good day. Always been fascinated by people's stories because they're all so different and so unique. And, you know, like Take Me Along was written for a friend of mine who fell in love with a woman from Canada who didn't speak English. She spoke French. And it was this amazing, they had an amazing connection. And that's what that was about. You Don't Have to Hurry Home was about this girl I liked in college, typical. One of Those Nights was written during a pretty dark time in my life. You know, a lot of us musicians go through that dark period where we're, you know, we get depressed and all that. And that was, I started writing that song while I was at a psychiatrist who had a piano in her office. And I didn't finish that song till a few years after. And it honestly comes, you never know. I feel like I could write a song about this mug and be really descriptive and paint a picture. You know what I mean? I actually did that as an exercise growing up. I would take like this computer mouse and I would sit for 10 minutes and just write about that computer mouse. No matter what came, no matter how terrible it might have been, I would just write and describe what I saw, felt, smelled, everything. And it really, you know, and then I dove into lyrics like Paul Simon and James Taylor and Billy Joel, like some of the best lyricists out there. And I really read their lyrics as poems. And I'm just like, God, the way they weave words is incredible. So you can get in, it's generic answer, but I really get inspired by anything and everything. Of course, now I've written a million songs for my wife and my daughter. So the next record is actually, that's coming out hopefully spring, summer, is my last record was really different. A lot of people loved it. A lot of people didn't. It was too much of a departure from my normal stuff. This record should have been my second record. And it's more uplifting. It's more healing because I had a lot of that happen over, especially since I met my wife and had a daughter. Your heart grows like the Grinch and you feel all these, you feel all these feelings you never felt. And a lot of this album is about that.
In the same way that you were inspired and kind of learn how to write from listening to other writers, I can say that about you. Even this person that I'm getting ready to name, structured the way that I write songs, the way that I play songs specifically, you know, and truth be told, Matt, you know, when playing in church since I was really a kid, since I was in middle school, sure. Professionally since my freshman year in high school, you run into musicians be like, man, who are you listening to? You know, some of those chords that you're doing, you know, I always say Matt Cusson. Always
have been. That's amazing.
No, really, really. I've put you on literally just 3 weeks ago when you agreed to do the interview. The organist at my church was talking about Bobby McFerrin or Take Six.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, you want to know who's really cool? And I played him your a cappella interlude from your debut. Yeah. And he was just blown away.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so
it's amazing, bro.
You know, I have you to credit, and that's this incredible person that I'm getting ready to say, who is the reason why I even know who you are, Miss Shoshana Bean.
You know, the queen.
You two, yeah. Two, and to see you both, having followed you both for so long, to see you both getting your flowers, you with this incredible Grammy nomination that you received, and her with Hell's Kitchen and all these other things
that
she's been able to do since that time. The marriage of music that you two were able to make for her debut album really just broadened my horizon, so much so to where I keep a binder of sheet music. It's over there in the corner. And the first two songs are 1/16th and Again.
Because of the number and A, the letter.
And so when you two released the sheet music for that temporarily, like I was a huge fan.
Amazing.
I was the one of the ones that purchased the sheet music. And so, what do you remember about the process of writing those songs with Shoshana?
So well, bro. So our story is pretty fascinating. We met because we both were signed to Brian McKnight. He had a record label, and we had to go to a bunch of meetings in New York together and all that. And we met, we immediately just fell in love with each other. Just not, you know, not like a romantic, but just musically personal, like clicked like that. And we went on tour together. We have so many stories, man. And there's actually some videos on YouTube. If you Google us, there's some old videos of us singing, like,
I've,
you know, Luther songs. You see the one of us in the car on the road driving up California with the dog on my lap. Yeah. So fun times. Again is a gospel tune, man. It is. She wanted something along those lines. And I believe we were at my apartment when I lived in LA, and I just started playing that chord progression, which is a fairly typical chord progression, especially in gospel music. And, you know, I've heard that chord progression in a million songs, but I just started playing it and she started singing. I was like, okay, we got to keep going with this one. And 1/16th was one of those songs where she sent me a voice memo, the melody, and I just put chords to it, started to kind of do a little arrangement of the thing, but then she gave it to, I forget the group's name that's on that tune.
Mosaic.
Yes. And they, you know, took it home and crushed it. Again was special because I also remember being in the studio in LA. I played guitar on that. And I'm not a great guitar player. I can get by like with a song or two in a live show. But the guy that was producing the record said, no, you sound great. Plus you know the chords better than I do. So just try. And I played electric guitar. First time I ever recorded electric guitar on that record. And, you know, we sang all the BGVs. It was fun, dude. It was so much fun. Working with her is easy, fun. We actually started writing another tune that I'm obsessed with. About a year ago. We haven't finished it yet because obviously she's been crazy busy, but it's got like a baby face vibe guitar. It's really cool. I hope we get a chance to finish it. But yeah, she's amazing, bro.
I'm so glad that you said that because it kind of goes in line with my next question. But yeah, Again, and even from Again, it introduced me to other voices like Billy Porter. If I'm not mistaken, Billy arranged the choir vocals for Again.
Possibly, yeah. Yes, yeah, so, possibly, yeah. Billy's nuts.
You know, and when I say I'm a diehard fan, like I own physical CDs, like
it's so
I've seen the liner notes of all the
incredible
stuff.
So I miss that.
People don't do it anymore. I have a whole cabinet full of like vinyls. I maybe have 100 to 200 vinyls.
Dude, I miss that so much. I always wanted to know who mixed what, who produced what, who sang this. I always wanted to know that, man. And it's so hard. I went to one of my songs on Apple Music and pressed C credits, and it was all the wrong credits. Like somebody else wrote it. Somebody else. But I was like, what is this? So people don't even care anymore, man. It's frustrating.
Yeah. It's definitely a lost art, but it was those things that kind of, you know, I appreciate your sentiments about my opening song, but it was really looking up videos of, and paying attention to how people like you lay vocals and the microphone I have is because I saw you or Shoshana use it, the Neumann U87. I went and, you know, bought the microphone for my in-home studio.
Yep. Got mine right here. Yep. I've had it for 15 years, man. And I've sung on a million different, and this one with my voice, it just fits so, so great.
Yeah. So last night, you know, in preparing for the interview, I came across a clip of you singing Don't Let Go by PJ Morton. It's in what ways, because it took, one of my favorite voices, who ironically I also came to know through Shoshana, but she's become a mentor and I'm a friend to me. It's Kim Burrell.
Amazing.
And it took her kind of telling me, hey, Corey, your vibrato sounds good. You have elements that are good. Don't try to conform too much to sound like other people. And it's something that opened up so many horizons for me to even be able to lay vocals in studio and stack and not have to take 1,000 takes and just be okay with what it is that I did.
Yeah, man.
What was that a hard or easy transition for you going into the studio and appreciating what it is that you sound is one thing when you're working with a producer and you're working on studio time. But for people like me and you, where you're your own engineer, what was that like being self-assured about your gift and your talent?
It took me a long time. I remember the first time I went to the studio, I was about 15 or 16, and I recorded 2 or 3 songs just as like somebody gave me a gift. Hey, go to the studio and record. And I was so upset with how I sounded. I broke the tape and I never heard it again. And that tape is gone forever. I hated my voice. I was like, that's what I sound like. And, you know, being a young teenager, of course, it's going to hit you in a different way. But I grew up imitating people. My nickname, when I was in my late teens was Brian McWhite. Cause all I did was imitate how he sang and how he played and everything. I imitate Stevie constantly. I wish I could sing like Donny Hathaway. Like I always tried. I used to do an incredible impression of Nat King Cole when I was like really young. When I went through puberty, my voice got lower. I did a really good impression of, Nat King Cole, who is probably one of my favorite singer piano players ever. And I guess I didn't really find my voice until I started writing more. I always wrote, but recording them and getting them down, I was like, oh, this is a Brian McKnight song. I'm going to start trying to sound like him on this song. And this is that. But I think my first album, which I released, originally released when I was, I think, 24, 25, I think it kind of gave me a voice. And then although Clive Davis heard that record and said, well, we already have a Brian McKnight, so we don't need another one. So I still had elements. Yeah. I still had elements of that, of him. But it was the beginning of finding my own voice. And then with my second record, like I said, I went more singer songwriter and it was a departure of what I love. Cause I was listening to record labels and everybody telling me what I need to do. And I took that advice and I love my second record, but it wasn't as well received as the first and hopefully the next one will be. But it also helped me lyrically. I told some of the most personal stories on that record that I've ever told. And it helped me. It's just a matter of creating that voice through writing, through imitating other people. I also found my voice. And that sounds weird to say, but you imitate other people and then you don't want to actually sound like them, but you take little bits and pieces. And I think that's a way with a lot of singers, a lot of younger singers that I especially see, they sound like somebody or their phrasing is exactly like somebody. And that's awesome. But like Kim told you, don't try to be somebody else, man. Just sing and let it out. And I think once you finally learn how to sing the lyrics you wrote and really feel them so that other people can interpret them the way they want, I think that's when you start to find your voice. And I'm finally at a point now, it took a long time, man, where I'm really quick with the take 6 stuff when I record it, but my lead stuff, I still do 10 takes and, you know, edit it up, but I try not to overkill. Cause I used to, man, that first record, I was so insecure. I was like, the high note in Here's to You and Me. My voice has gotten so much higher since that first record, but that note was so high. Here's to you. Yeah. I was just like, I think we did 20 something takes of that. And I did something different every time. And that was the one we chose. But man, I think finding your own voice takes a lot. It's the lucky people like the Stevies and all them who find it so early. And yeah, man, it's sometimes I still wonder if I found my own voice, you know, I definitely have a voice. It's hard to find your own voice, man. It's especially when you're so in love with Stevie and these other people that I've been listening to forever. It's hard to step away from all that. When I tell you, every record label said, man, you sound like Brian McKnight. You got to get away from that, when I was like 18, 19, 20. And I think, thankfully I did, but that taught me how to do so much. You know, I don't regret that at all.
I mean, I agree. You know, you started off by saying that, you know, the first time you heard yourself on record, you cracked it and it's nowhere to be found. But I think it takes a lot of awareness. So, you know, in my, so it took Kim, but also she encouraged me to go to an ENT, which was able to help me uncover some different things about what was going on. And so now I've become, over the last 4 years, I'm a vocal teacher and a piano teacher. And that's one of the main things. Yeah, that I tell my students, you have to really appreciate the parts about you that make you cringe. You know, figure out, be aware enough to know what it is that may be a little, you know, need some improvement. But also embrace those things that you just cannot help. If you phrase things a certain way, embrace that. If your vibrato is a little heavy in certain areas, figure out how to make that work for you. Yes. So, I think that's great that, you know, most people would become discouraged. I'm so grateful that you didn't become discouraged when they told you that you were sounding like Brian McKnight.
Man, and it helps to be produced by other people too, to get their ears on your voice. And then what really helped me mold was getting my home studio and being able to try stuff and listen and say, okay, well, that was terrible. Okay, I really like that. Let's keep that and try to enhance that. Like, it's a mixture of, it's life, man. It's just a mixture of life and experiences that gives you your own voice. It's the same with poetry, with authors, with painters. It's the same.
I do want to talk about, you know, your nomination. So you were nominated for a Grammy for an incredible arrangement How Deep Is Your Love, which is a song originally written and recorded by the Bee Gees. It's been covered by so many other wonderful artists, but your version got you a Grammy nomination. So what does it mean to you, Matt, to know that all of your many years of hard work and dedication paid off?
You know, it was an incredible validation that I didn't necessarily think I needed. And it's not that you need it, but it's to be validated by other musicians, your peers, the people I look up to. And it was wild, man, because I almost had to say no to that gig because my daughter had just been born and you know what it is to have a newborn. And we had just moved from New York City to where we live now in Western Massachusetts. And all my studio gear was in storage. And I had like a janky little MIDI board. I think I got it somewhere right here. I don't know where it is. I had a janky little MIDI board and a laptop. And, you know, Gabe from King's Return hit me up, who I'm such a fan of those dudes, man. Like, oh my God, they make everything that I arrange so much better. And he was like, hey, can you do an arrangement for us? And I almost said, I just moved. I have no studio gear with me. And I got a, you know, 2 month old. But I went with that whole, like I said earlier, I'm going to do everything. I want to say, I'm going to try my best. So I told him, listen, I might be a little slow, but I'll get it done. And I think I did that arrangement in like 3 or 4 days, and then sang through it for him. And, you know, we made our fixes and this and that, but to get nominated, it was never in my brain. That I didn't even submit it. I think their producer submitted it to the Grammys. And it went viral when they do their sitting in the stairwell and saying it. And it went viral. I've never had the first day it got like 2 million views on Twitter. It got 1 million views on YouTube. It was crazy. So they decided to put it on their record. And then my phone blew up one day. I didn't know there was nominations being, you know, made. I had no idea. And they were like, bro, you got nominated. And I cried. Like, I couldn't believe it. And then I had to go get my daughter because she had, at that point, just learned how to walk and was crashing into something. But yeah, man, it's crazy. It still doesn't make sense that when I get introduced at shows, they say Grammy nominated Matt Cusin. It's so crazy. It's sunk in, but it hasn't sunk in.
You so deserve it.
Thank you, bro.
Following your career. No, for real. And because a lot of people say things and they're kind of weightless words. But no, really, you deserve it.
Thank you, man.
Just for your hard work, your dedication to remaining creative through life's changes, and not becoming a victim of the industry, and what the industry might say. Matt, you have no idea what that's going to do for the musicians and the artists to come, who are going to hear, you know, hopefully watch this interview, but also hear your story from wherever they may hear your story. So, man, thank you for that.
Man, thank you. And what I'll say to that is I've been through all that in my late teens and early 20s. It was, you have to sound like this. You're too white to sing like this. You're too, you know, young to sing jazz music. It was this and that. And then McKnight signed me and it was, okay, we're going to make a, you know, a Brian McKnight type album. And that was fine. And we wrote a few songs and they were great, but it wasn't me. And then from there, I got another record deal, but they wanted me to be John Mayer. They wanted me to be a singer-songwriter. I got offered a country deal, and I was like, for real? I have no twang in my voice. I love Willie Nelson and Dolly Parton. I mean, they're some amazing, but I don't know the current country music like I probably should. And until, even with, like I said, with my second record, I was still being what other people asked me to be. Simplify stuff. Don't go there. Don't do that. Until I let that go and decided I'm going to do music. I want music to be fun again. I want music to that, and that I write to inspire people, that I want it to inspire me. I want to take pieces from things that inspire me. Until I started to be who I wanted to be, that's when I started getting the Grammy, getting the John Lennon Songwriting Award, getting all this other stuff. And that's what I try to tell every young musician. You know, there's already, it's like I said, I just released a song called First Me, and the chorus says, it's hard to believe in yourself when you're told to be somebody else. Why be the second or simply repeat? I'd rather be the very first me. I was always going to be the next Justin Timberlake, the next, but why? A friend of mine in Nashville, who's an amazing songwriter, said, it's great that you're putting out a record like singer-songwriter, but don't forget to do you. Because nobody can do what you do. And that goes for every musician. Nobody can do what you do. You know what I mean? So that's the advice I try to give younger musicians, because anybody can imitate anybody else, you know?
You would think, though, that people would know that you're original, because a lot of the artists that you've named recorded covers, like your cover of Could by Brian McKnight, you and Shoshana. Mm-hmm. Ended up making it into a movie, Note to Self.
Yeah.
I remember. Yeah. And your cover of Comfortable by John Mayer still mm-hmm. has thousands upon thousands of views and streams. So you mm-hmm. would think that hearing your take on these, people would understand that you're in a lane of your own. Because, man, yeah. Listening to the original Comfortable, which I listened to after I learned about your version, mm-hmm. I still don't know how you made the two make sense. I don't... you did that, the chorus,
you,
the second chorus with all those harmonies, just incredible.
Thank you, bro. Thank you, man. It's a great tune, man. A great tune is a great tune, man. And if you, and I sang that thing like I was going through what he was going through when he wrote it. And I think we can all kind of relate to that, you know, the perfect person ain't necessarily the perfect person for you. And kudos to him, because that song, that lyric is phenomenal.
Fantastic. Matt, is your daughter showing any signs that she's been bitten by the music bug?
She has, bro. She has. So from ages, since she could walk, from ages up until about a year ago, every night we had a dance party before bed. Sounds kind of, you know, not the thing you want to do before you're winding her down to go to sleep, but we had a dance party. She has sung with me on stage first time last August, and it was magical for me. She gravitates towards these songs like she loves Tonight I Celebrate My Love for You.
Are
she
you serious?
Loves A Whole New World. Yes, dude. She loves A Whole New World. She loves a lot of the kid stuff, which obviously she loves Thriller. I think all kids love Thriller. But then out of the blue, there's a Bill Evans song called Children's Play Song that I played her all throughout her childhood. And she loves that song now. And it's Bill Evans. Like, I didn't know who Bill Evans was when I was 4 years old. She loves Brazilian music. I play Brazilian music all the time. And obviously now I'm playing Christmas music, and she loves certain choir, you know, not, I wouldn't say she loves the arrangement. She loved choir versions of this song and the jazz version of this song. So it's there, man. And I'm terrified because I don't know where music is going to be in 10, 20, 30 years when I got to try to coach her through whatever. But as of right now, she says she wants to be a dancer when she grows up. And I feel like that might even be worse than a musician, because not worse, because my God, I wish I could dance. But she's picking all the jobs where nobody's making money these days.
It's hard. You know, like you said, you never had a regular job, never had to work at McDonald's. Same. I've been working professionally since I was a kid and living on my own since then. But yeah, when you have kids, it changes. When you get married, of course, it changes.
And for sure.
Kids, I think, changes the whole thing. My daughter in the same way. So I've been, you know, teaching her so she knows how to sight read. But as of like the last 4 weeks, she's been picking up how to play by ear. So the other day, she's on the piano. Look, that is Whitney Houston. I'm like, woo!
Yes.
So she
That's
listens
amazing,
to,
man. So she's got it.
Yeah, but it's also the type of music that I keep her around. So I try to, in a way, try to limit, you know, certain things. I don't want her to be so such in a pigeonhole. So like, she's allowed to watch Barney, but not many other musical kid shows, because I know that Barney just had a science to the way that music was.
Sure.
But the type of artist that she listens to, I mean, Whitney Houston, Stephanie Mills, Chaka Khan, who's her favorite.
My God.
Can name all these people by their voices. She's only 4. So it's crazy how universal music can be. Transcend languages and ages.
It's incredible, man. I wish my daughter had that vocabulary. She's getting there. She still loves. I should have banned some of the kid shows. the Coco Melons that just, oh my God.
Yeah.
My bad on that one. I didn't know what it was. And I just saw her one day watching. I was like, okay, this is not good. no offense, dude that came up with that.
No offense to Coco Melon.
Do your thing. Yeah, do your thing. Because that dude, he knew what kids like.
It's just not the same. You know, the musically we grew up on, and, especially. You know,
I watched Looney Tunes. I loved Looney Tunes. They had full orchestras and like scores and DuckTales. And we all know the DuckTales song. So, but she a new show she loves is Beat Bugs. Have you heard of that one?
I have not.
It's a show on Netflix, and every episode is based on a Beatles song.
Are you serious?
Then they sing the Beatles. It's great. And they sing the Beatles song throughout the show. And so we listen to it. I love that she loves the Beatles. I mean, the Beatles are the best. And, so yeah, man, she's getting there. I'm trying to, every day I play, there's music in the house 24 hours a day, and it's usually jazz, classical, R&B. And she's starting to love a couple Prince tunes, a couple Stevie tunes. So she'll get there. I messed up with some of those TV shows in the early stages, but she's 4. She's going to like some of those shows regardless.
It's the heavy critic in me. I heard the arrangements and I was just like, I don't know. There are no chord changes. Barney at least will give you a good key change, like halfway through the song. Right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So, Matt, you know, closing up, you've shared stages and worked with so many great artists such as Christina Aguilera, NDRE, Boyz II Men, Stevie Wonder. The list goes on and on. What to you has been your biggest accomplishment in your career this far?
Man, in my career, the Grammy nomination obviously was massive. Performance wise, playing with Stevie was different because I had to learn a few of his tunes. I had 4 keyboards, which I'm fine with, but it was okay. You got to play this sound for this verse and then switch over to here and then switch sounds on this one. Like, it was so stressful that I didn't enjoy it. I was so worried about playing the wrong chord or messing up that I just had to get it over with. The first thing Stevie said to me when he walked in soundcheck was, okay, hey, Matt, nice to meet you. Follow me. And Stevie's one of the greatest keyboard players ever. And that was a little intimidating, but we got through it, man. And it was magical. And he's such a joy, dude. I've been around him. I've been lucky enough to be around him a few times. And he's such a lovely human being that I've told him on multiple occasions, bro, you've changed my life. And he is so thankful and so wonderful. And that was special. Singing a duet with Christina Aguilera every night was pretty amazing. You know, hand in hand, 2 spotlights, no pressure. I had to learn the song in like 2 days. I didn't know it. And I had to learn it in like 2 days and perform in front of 8,000 people immediately. So that was very stressful. But once like 3rd, 4th, 5th show ran around and I was holding hands with Christina Aguilera, looking into her eyes and singing, like that was like a rock star pop moment that I didn't know that I would still get, you know? And that was just a few years ago. So that was incredible. I would say also the first time I played for Brian McKnight, because he was such an inspiration when I was a kid growing up. I think I first heard him when I was like 5. And one of the first songs I ever learned on piano was Never Felt This Way. And you might have to teach me how to read notes, because I don't read at all. I'm all ear.
I had to teach myself in order to teach the kids that I
did
teach.
Did it take you a long time?
I just learned how to read as of like 2 years ago, Matt.
Okay. Because everybody keeps telling me. Yeah, it's German to me when I look at it.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to go F-A-C. Okay, that's a C. Okay, F.
Yeah, like, I used to have to do that. And it mm-hmm. took me actually going through and teaching myself, because I love my piano teacher. Without her, I would not, you know, be able to play sure. where I am today. But I made it through all 10 years not understanding a thing she was telling me. Yeah. About sight reading. But
every piano teacher I've had, it was, okay, man, here's what we're going to do. And it was like Lila Fletcher book one. It was Hot Cross Buns. Matt, can you play this? I was like, can you just play it for me real quick so I can just understand it and then I would memorize it. And I did that every lesson that I took. And I've only taken probably a handful of piano lessons my whole life. But I want to learn how to read, because even when I arranged a tune for the New York Pops a couple years ago, I had to sit with an orchestrator. And they're, oh my God, I don't know if you've ever done that. I go like this on the piano and they write as I'm playing, just write all the notes. It's mind blowing to me. It would be nice to be able to do that. Not that fast, but to be able to write down, because I arrange a lot. It'd be nice to be able to write down, but you might have to give me some tips on reading after.
Yeah,
use
the Faber books. This is the Wizard of Oz book. Faber is the best. They have an adult book. Faber, okay, F-A-B-E-R.
F-A-B-E-R.
You can buy the accelerator, accelerated older beginner book. Of course, okay. You're not a beginner, but if you look through that,
I might need it though for reading. Yeah,
it makes it crystal clear to you. You can literally teach yourself within a day, and it'll make sense the way they. It's more math and science than anything. The way they make the lines and the spaces make sense. It's a game changer.
Faber books, I got it pulled up right here. I'm gonna check those out. Thank you, man. Because I forgot what the question was, but yeah. yes, I don't read music and I need to learn how, I think was the conclusion of that.
Matt, what is next? You know, you've done so much, a wonderful career. You're probably reaching your 20th year soon professionally, or have you reached it yet?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think this is 20. This might be 20. Okay. Yeah.
So you've made it 20 years in the industry. What is next?
I'm never satisfied ever. I'm satisfied in my married life. I'm satisfied there. I'm never satisfied musically until I am as good as Oscar Peterson. I can arrange like John Williams. I can there's so much to learn. It's a lifetime of learning. I'm mixing records now, for TV shows and stuff, which I never thought I would do. There's so much in music that's incredible. And the cool thing about my career is there's always been something so different and new every year. I just produced a couple of tunes for the Rockefeller Center Tree Lighting, and I've never done that. I've played that before, but I've never produced music for it. And it was incredible. And I started scoring movies a few years ago, and I'm falling head over heels in love with that. Immediately next, I just released a single with a Christmas song with the Aeolians of Oakwood University, who is my favorite choir on the planet. And it was a bucket list to work with them because I've been listening to them forever. I'm hoping to do more of that. We also did a song, non-Christmas song for their EP or record that they'll be putting out hopefully next year. I'm putting my record out, like I said, hopefully late spring, early summer. I have 4 songs left to record and then it's done. And man, just whoever working with you, clearly we got to do something together, man.
Let's go, dude. Working on a project, Matt Cousin. I need you on this project.
done. Yes. 100%. Yes. Let's go. I'm in, man. Yeah. Whatever you need.
I will do the thinking and I will reach out to you about that, but absolutely.
Great.
Absolutely.
There might be something real nice, two piano, two voice thing. Like, I don't know. We'll figure it out. Whatever you need, man. Arrangement, keys, voice. Great. Let's go.
I've got a beautiful idea. I'll let you know. All right, Matt, close this up.
Yeah.
What I want you to do is take these last few minutes. If you could give any words of encouragement, this could be to a songwriter, singer, musician, someone in the industry, maybe a kid growing up and knowing I have all this creative energy and I don't know a darn thing to what to do with it. Matt, you have this last few minutes to say whatever you want to say, what's on your heart.
Well, to piggyback off of what I said earlier, being yourself is everything. doing what you do and finding that is hard, I know. But this answer would have been a lot different even just 10 years ago. With the ability to be able to record a song and have, like, I could record a song right now and it'd be out in an hour. You know what I mean? The ability to do that, the ability to share your gift. I'm not a big social media guy, but it's definitely an outlet and an avenue. There's so many different ways to share what you do. Just be yourself. Cause like I said, there's always going to be the next Stevie, the next this, the next that, the next, they've been telling me there's the next Michael Jordan for years and I ain't seen it. So be yourself, grow, and don't ever get satisfied. I know too many musicians that reach a certain point and they think there's nothing left to learn, nothing left to do. They're so wrong, because there's so much. Do everything. Play at Madison Square Garden, play at Starbucks, play everywhere. It's all music. Collaborate. It's fun. Do it all, man.